at Kira.
Welcome home, Kira.
Thanks, Tot,
she said, distant and lost in thought. Tot then gave Han and Chewie a pointed look and held out his hands.
Weapons?
Didn't bring them, Han said, showing the empty holster. Didn't seem necessary for a friendly business meeting. He looked highly skeptical, but Kira nodded that they were legitimate, and he reluctantly waved them into the lift. Sliding up to face Dryden Vos, both Han and Kira looked out the window at the desolate desert landscape. The refinery fell away below them, growing smaller and smaller. Kira looked tired and defeated, like she was marching to her doom. Irritation flared within him. Why did she look like that? She was going back to her luxury, back to Voss's place of honor. He'd be left with absolutely nothing, not even a ride off this crappy planet. He reined himself in. He honestly didn't know what she was facing. He wasn't even sure if she knew. You all right? He asked. She nodded, not looking at him. It'll be over soon, he said helpfully. He didn't add whether we win or lose, because that much was obvious.
I know it will, she said,
her voice hardening. And we're gonna win, he said. Sometimes if you said a thing like you were confident about it, it helped it come true. It was an idea worth trying, anyway.
It's not that kind of game, Han, she said,
her voice sounding like she wished he would grow up and face reality already.
The object isn't to win. It's to stay in it as long as you can.
He frowned. Was she giving up even before they attempted the plan? You don't know everything.
No,
she agreed.
Just more than you.
He opened his mouth to retort, but the lift reached the top. Chewie moaned encouragement at them, and Han readied himself for whatever was to follow. The doors opened, and Voss stood there, arms open to greet them as if they were honored guests who had finally answered his invitation. He wore casual black clothes, a light shirt open to show his chest, where the odd red veins still streaked under his skin, waiting for him to get enraged so they could flare up and be terrifying again. The lounge behind him was empty and felt strangely large without the people and the entertainment.
You know, Dryden said as they walked forward, my men told me no way they'd pull this off. Kira's too inexperienced. But I believed in you.
He stopped, taking the group in. His voice immediately lost its congeniality.
Where's Beckett?
Kira had remained cool throughout Dryden's monologue, even when it got to the insult about her. She stepped forward now.
He didn't make it.
Dryden paused, and then his face fell. He stepped forward and put his arms around Han and Kira. Han tried not to flinch away as Dryden pushed himself between the two of them and pulled them close.
Tell me.
He sounded like he actually cared about Beckett, and not just his cargo, which didn't really jive with the fact that he'd been ready to kill Beckett before.
He took a bad turn, Han said. He died, saving my life.
How are you holding up?
Dryden asked, squeezing Han's shoulder.
Me? People usually didn't ask Han that question.
I'm okay.
Good. He squeezed Han's shoulder again. Good.
Losing friends. Never get used to it. Never. Still, life goes on.
He perked up and let them go as one of his enforcers appeared at Han's elbow.
Colo clawfish, anyone?
Han jumped, not realizing the enforcer was there. The man was clearly one of Dryden's security detail, but he was serving squirming, slimy treats on a tray. With his other hand, he held his electro staff. Han noticed another enforcer across the room and swallowed. The fishy offering was not a hospitable gesture. If they got out of line, they would be sliced up as quickly as these hapless creatures had been. Maybe even served at the next cocktail party.
No thanks,
he said, forcing his voice to stay light.
We just ate. Whatever Beckett's shortcomings may have been, I always admired him,
Dryden said.
He had principles. When he made a commitment, he honored it. And I think we can all take solace in knowing he would have been happy you're here, following his example.
He beamed at Han, as if expecting applause for his off-the-cuff eulogy.
We learned a lot from him,
Han said. Chewie moaned agreement and set his two cases down next to Han's and Kira's.
Han and Chewbacca behaved admirably, Kira said. They'll make reliable smugglers should we have need, as soon as they get a ship.
Gotta have one of those,
Dryden said, chuckling. He sat down on the couch and gave Kira a pointed look. She joined him, shrinking from trusted, dangerous lieutenant into her role of veritable arm candy. Han relaxed his stance.
We appreciate the opportunity to work for you again.
Dryden had been stroking Kira's cheek and neck, looking as if he was used to her wearing something that revealed a lot more skin for him to drool over.
You know, my dear, I would have been inconsolable had anything happened to you. I have no one in my life I trust the way I trust you.
Han shifted uncomfortably.
So, I guess we'll just take our payment and be on our way. I'm sure you have markets to dominate, competitors to crush.
Dryden looked up like he just remembered Han was there. And Han was very interesting.
First, let's see what you brought me.
Han's heart rate increased.
You want me to open it?
Yes, Han, I do.
He sounded like a protocol droid, devoid of emotion, patiently waiting.
Han shrugged, as if there were no reason not to trust him.
He bent down, opened the case, and pulled his hand back to avoid the hissing steam. He pulled out a rack of coaxium vials and held them up, the blue shining, even in the daylight streaming through the windows. Dryden held out his hand, fingers slightly shaking.
Give me one.
Han put the vial back into the rack.
It's very explosive stuff. I don't think it's a good idea.
I never ask for anything twice, Dryden said.
His voice so cold, Han worried it would destabilize the cargo. Han shrugged and handed over the rack, cradling it carefully until he was sure Dryden had a good hold on it.
Dryden held it up to his eyes,
the blue casting unhealthy shadows on his face.
Magnificent. How'd you do it?
Wasn't easy,
Han said, and started to tell the story of their adventure. But Dryden spoke again.
No, I mean it
looks exactly like the real thing, he said.
Kira and Chewie looked at Han, waiting for his next move. The air wheezed out of him, and he had trouble finding the strength to breathe again. Dryden also watched him, the pleasant smile on his face. He'd been set up. Frankly, he was tired of people letting him down. He smiled crookedly like Dryden was bluffing and said,
"That's because it is the real thing."
Dryden nodded. His voice took on the ugly, razored tone that had threatened Beckett's life.
Had my associate not warned me about your little plan to steal my credits and give the real coaxium to Enfys Nest.
The red veins in his face began to darken, and Han felt himself step back. He held his hand out dramatically and let the blue vials drop.
Han flinched, knowing that ducking and covering wouldn't save him, but still fighting the urge to hide under a table.
And here we go, plan two. Dryden's eyes had never left Han's.
I must say, I am very, very disappointed,
he rasped. His associate had given them up. Han's eyes flickered from the enraged man in front of him to Kira's, but could read nothing in her face.
Listen, Dryden, I don't know what you think or what Kira told you, but I would never even dream—
Not Kira!
Dryden said, interrupting him. He turned to Kira and eyed her.
No, Kira, it seems, has a weakness for you. We'll get to that in a minute. I'm talking about my other associate.
Dryden used his comlink to call his unseen ally.
Won't you join us?
The lift opened, and Dryden's associate walked into the room, blaster in hand, aimed from the hip straight at Han.
I am sorry, kid,
Tobias Beckett said. Han felt untethered in a vacuum. He'd relied on people. He'd counted on people, and nearly all of them had let him down or outright betrayed him. Beckett had warned him not to trust anyone. At the time, Han hadn't realized Beckett had also been referring to himself. After a moment of tense, agonizing silence, Han spoke.
Why?
Beckett had the gall to look slightly guilty at the expression on Han's face, but the blaster didn't waver.
Come on,
he said.
Don't look at me like that. You weren't paying attention. I told you don't trust anybody. Am I wrong about that?
And it was a lot of credits, he didn't say, but he didn't have to. As Han was learning, that seemed to be the only solid reason to do anything out here. Han glanced from Beckett to the coaxium case he had carried. It still stood open, inviting him over. He took one step, but Beckett stepped forward, raising the blaster.
No, no, no. Step away from that.
He walked over to the case himself and reached inside the lid. From a hiding place, he pulled out the DL-44 that he'd given Han. No one looked surprised at the weapon's reveal.
It's too late, Han said. The coaxium's refined. Enfys has it.
Figured she might,
Beckett said, as if she had taken just one more thing from him.
So?
Dryden said.
I've sent my people into the refinery. They'll collect your new friends and bring them back here to see their masks added to my collection before they die.
Han stepped forward.
They'll never...
Kid, they already have,
Beckett said. His voice sounded gentle, but Han would never think of him as gentle again.
What?
Just wait.
Han stared at the desert out the window, but they were too high up to see what was going on directly beneath them at the refinery. Dryden relaxed on the couch. Kira sat ramrod straight beside him. The intercom buzzed to life, and a voice said,
It's over, sir. We've got him. And we've secured the package.
Dryden sat back and grinned.
Excellent. Thank you, Eamon.
He looked over at Kira.
My heart is broken.
It really is.
What would you do if the person you trusted most betrayed you?
He paused, watching her. She thought for a moment.
I'd want to know why she did it,
she finally said.
If it was a moment of weakness, or something else. And then, I'd ask that person to prove their loyalty by sacrificing something they love.
Her eyes locked on Han for one agonizing moment. He swallowed and looked at Beckett.
I guess Chewie's my only friend left.
The Cloud Riders had tossed their weapons into the sand, surrendering completely. Dryden Voss's enforcers approached the coaxium cases slowly, looking for any sudden moves.
Open it,
the leader said, his voice rasping. Enfys smiled. She'd hoped they would do that. One of Dryden's soldiers released the clasp and opened the case, looking down into nothing.
It's empty,
the lead enforcer said, and then repeated, panicked, into his comm.
It's empty!
The enforcer who had opened the case reached out and pulled the mask off the legendary Enfys nest and looked into the face of an old Savarine woman. She looked back at him with something like triumph. Enfys, who'd been waiting in the shelter with the rest of her group, gave a splitting cry and ran forward, leaping into the air. The masked locals who wore the Cloud Rider's armor scattered, making way for Enfys and her crew to come forward, unmasked, unarmored, and still slaughter the enforcers with frightening efficiency.
"My mother wore the mask," she thought,
as she snapped the neck of the lead enforcer.
"And now I wear it. But it is not all that I am."
Her friends, her family, were disarming the enforcers, or killing them before they could react. Some carried simple fishing knives loaned by the locals, and others had grabbed their own weapons from the sand. They were improvising, adapting, and surviving, the way Enfys' mother had taught them.
"They underestimate us, and that is why they lose."
At Han's statement, Beckett followed Kira's eyes and smiled at Han.
"Warned you about her, too. It's a shame. We would have made a hell of a team."
Han sighed and looked at the man who had served as his mentor.
"You're wrong about one thing, Beckett. I was paying attention. You told Chewie that people are predictable. You're no exception."
He grinned. The intercom blazed to life again, and blasters, battle cries, and people screaming came through.
"It's empty. The case is empty. It's up."
The words ended with screaming and war cries. Then heavy silence descended on the link. Dryden's face melted from surety that he'd won into confused alarm.
"Aemon, what's happening? Come in!"
Wasn't it obvious what was happening? Han looked at Dryden sympathetically.
"You didn't send all your fancy enforcers, did you? Because that would leave you..."
He looked pointedly at the two remaining enforcers, alert but as confused as Dryden.
"A little short-handed around here."
Beckett shook his head, grinning. Han wondered if he regretted choosing the wrong side. He gave Han a little rueful salute, and then looked at the coaxium vials on the table.
"This means the real coaxium leaves here with one of us."
"Uh-huh," Han said, nodding. Beckett thought for a moment, and then his blasters were out. He fired with machine-like precision. The surprised enforcer across the room was thrown against the wall with the force of the blaster fire. Han stepped away from the enforcer, who stupidly still carried the plate of fish, so Beckett could do away with him, too. Han dodged the flying air flotsam as the enforcer's body crashed to the ground.
"What are you doing?"
Dryden screamed, panic and anger making his face striations come out again.
"Thinking," Beckett said. "And I prefer to be the only one with a blaster while I'm doing it."
To Han, he pointed to the fallen coaxium and said,
"You can put that back in the case, nice and easy."
Han gathered the vials carefully, wondering if they were more volatile since Dryden had dropped them, and realizing this wasn't any different from wondering if the maw or the tentacled thing would get them first. Still, he felt his chances of getting out of a blaster battle were better than getting out of an explosion that took his arms and head off. Chewbacca helped him load the coaxium back into its case. He closed it and locked the mechanism that would get steam circulating again. Chewie gave him a look, but didn't say anything. It was pretty obvious, though. How were they going to get out of this wrinkle?
"That's better," Beckett said.
He pointed a blaster at Chewie.
"You're coming with me, big guy."
Chewie looked at Han and moaned low, and Han was grateful that Beckett didn't speak Shriwook. He nodded sympathetically. He would think of something. Chewie would just have to trust him. Chewie gathered the coaxium cases in his arms, struggling a little under the weight. Beckett guided him slowly to the lift, eyes darting from Han to Dryden to Kira. One blaster was on the Wookiee, and the other one pointed somewhere amid the three of them.
ready to aim at anyone who made any sudden movement.
Dryden shook with rage.
Some friend!
Beckett looked at him, eyebrows raised.
I am your friend. I'm also an entrepreneur.
You're making a horrible mistake, Tobias!
Beckett shrugged amiably.
Could be. Won't be my first.
It'll be your last!
Dryden said, his toothless threat falling flat.
Maybe. Maybe not. Don't be so negative.
With Chewie on the lift, Beckett gave a little salute with his blaster.
See you around.
Chapter 19. The lift hadn't even closed fully before Han was moving. He dashed across the floor and dropped, skidding toward the dead enforcer on the far right side of the room. His blaster was still there, sticking out from under the body. He grabbed the barrel, tossed it in the air, caught it, and spun to face Dryden. In a perfect world, he would have caught Dryden still recovering from the shock of Han's trick and Beckett's betrayal. But Han had learned by now that he lived in a far from perfect world. Dryden had been going for his own weapon, a double-bladed laser-edged weapon with a grip in the middle that was mounted by his trophies. He looked like a man mad with a brain parasite, finally allowed to let his rage free. He stormed toward Han, intent on carving him into pieces. Han fired, but Dryden wasn't so blinded by rage that he wasn't able to act defensively and dodge. Rolling to the side and knocking over a display case, showering the floor with glass. Han took a crouch behind a display and waited, blaster ready. Dryden spoke into the silence from somewhere near a formerly pristine set of Mandalorian armor.
Han, I think it's time we reevaluate our relationship.
Han kept low.
Yeah?
He asked.
What do you say we join forces? Go after Beckett together?
After everything that had happened today, this guy was suggesting they trust each other? Han nearly laughed.
Yeah, let's definitely do that.
He jumped up to fire and Dryden was there, an arm's length away, trusting Han about as much as Han had trusted him. Han had no idea how he'd moved so silently across the broken glass, but he didn't have time to question the man. Dryden slashed with his weapon, the laser edge coming close to Han's face, and he danced backward. As if Han had asked the question anyway, Dryden said,
Teras Kasi, I've become something of an enthusiast.
That's really wonderful,
Han said, dodging the blades again. As if to show off the martial art in more detail, Dryden incorporated kicks and punches into his attacks, some landing, some not, always pushing him back. Han focused mostly on staying away from the weapon, which made it easy for Dryden to pummel him without mercy with all of his other attacks. A fist to the side of the head made the room spin momentarily, and a well-placed kick sent all the air out of his body. It also drove him farther backward, which was nice since he got a respite for a split second. It was that split second when he realized he'd lost the blaster somewhere in the scramble. He hadn't even noticed it was gone, probably because his hand was numb from one of Dryden's kicks. Seeing he was unarmed, Dryden launched himself at Han. But Han grabbed a club from one of Dryden's displays and blocked him. He was hoping to shatter the man's leg, but apparently the display version of this weapon wasn't as strong as the real thing. Still, it kept him alive a moment longer. He grabbed his blaster and rolled behind a couch, catching his breath and taking inventory of his limbs. They still all seemed to be there. Good.
You can't win,
Dryden said, his voice amused.
Even if you do, you'll be looking over your shoulder for the rest of your life.
I'm kinda getting used to that,
Han said. All of the plans he'd walked in here with had crumbled when reality hit them.
Nothing left but to start blasting.
He jumped up and leveled his blaster, but found that someone else in the room could also move quickly and silently, because Kira now blocked his clear shot at Dryden. She had the cutlass that an enforcer had once held,
and with a whirl, she knocked Han's blaster out of his hand, tucked the hilt between his feet, and twisted with a quick movement. Han tripped and fell onto his back, staring up at her with genuine shock. She leveled the blade at his chest.
"I'm sorry."
Dryden's voice remained amused, which was really starting to annoy Han. "You must understand, Han. She's done things that you don't know anything about." "But I do. I know everything. Once you're a part of Crimson Dawn, you never leave." Kira's face was a storm of emotions. Grim knowledge that he was right. Genuine grief at what she was about to do. Anger that her life had put her in this place. And anger at Han for leaving her. She gripped the cutlass tighter, and the cords in her arms stood out, emphasizing the Crimson Dawn brand on her wrist. "It's not true. I know you," he said to her. She nodded slightly, blue eyes locked on his. Dryden's face appeared over her shoulder, purring like a lover. "Prove it to him. For me," he said.
"It's what I was taught,"
Kira told Han.
"Find my enemy's weakness, and then use it. But today, I'm yours."
In an instant, Han realized she wasn't talking to him. She spun, and her blade caught Dryden in the shoulder, tearing his shirt and opening a wound in a spray of blood. He gaped at her, stumbling backward out of her range and bringing up his weapon. She leapt at him, and now it was Dryden on the defensive. The master facing a student with nothing but murder on her mind. He managed to deflect most of her attacks with his laser petards, but she was a focused force of nature, barreling down on him. He struck once, and she whirled around, the sword hitting his arm and driving his own petards into his chest, the laser edge slicing easily through his thin shirt.
Dryden gasped and fell back. "My weakness," he said,
his face still contorted with shock from the betrayal. And then the dark striations faded from his skin, and he went limp. "Where's your restraining bolt?" A decommissioned droid shouldn't have been able to get inside Kira's head so completely. But ever since they had arrived on Savareen, she'd thought about the self-made droid and her fight for freedom. She had found kinship with Kira because of Kira's bondage. Kira's restraining bolt lay on the ground before her, blood pooling under him. Her emotions were as complex as the maelstrom as she straightened and looked down at him. Relief that it was over. She was freed. Grief that he was gone. He had made her what she was, for better or worse. And grim satisfaction that her tormentor was dead. She never doubted Enfys Nest's word. While the details of the story shocked her, it didn't surprise her that Dryden was capable of such cruelty. Han or no Han, she couldn't have let him live. She straightened and let the weapon drop, hands shaking slightly.
"I had to."
Han's eyes were wide as he looked from her to the crime boss on the floor.
"Yeah, no, you did. You did."
She wasn't done yet, though. It wasn't as simple as killing Dryden, and Han would probably never understand that cutting off the head didn't always make the monster go away. But there was someone else who could take care of him the way she couldn't. She stepped up to him and grabbed his shoulders.
"Beckett and Chewbacca, you have to go after them."
Han looked at her like there was no one else in the galaxy. It made her ache.
"What are you going to do?"
She smiled at him.
"Well, if we give all the coaxium to Enfys, we're going to need something to buy a ship with."
She leaned to the side and looked meaningfully at the destroyed collectibles in the room, including a large selection of gems scattered from a jewel case.
She remembered that Dryden had taken them after he'd murdered the king of a faraway world, simply because it amused him. Han smiled at her, beaming as if he'd won a new starship in a legitimate game of Sabacc. She had just granted the wish he'd had since leaving Corellia. He wrapped his arms around her and kissed her, and for one shining moment, she saw their future together. Just the two of them and their own ship, like they had always dreamed. She held him tightly for as long as she could, savoring his lips on hers. He drew back reluctantly.
Kira,
he said.
She put a finger to his lips. Go and save Chewbacca. He needs you. And I think you need him, too.
He kissed her once more, and then ran to the lift. He turned and faced her before the doors closed. He looked like he wanted to say something, but couldn't find the words. He was never good with words.
Smile,
she said, feeling her own spread across her face. He frowned in confusion.
That's the word. Whenever I imagine myself off with you on some adventure, it always makes me smile.
He grinned back at her, that cocky, lopsided grin, confident that he could beat anything, or at least get away from anything.
Go. I'm right behind you,
she said, giving him a little wave. The doors closed, and Han was off to save his friend. Kira felt the smile fall from her face, and she went to the corpse of her old master. Her eyes immediately found the erodium ring he wore amid all of his opulence. She took his hand roughly, glad she didn't need to coddle him anymore. With a twist, the ring came off, and she went to Dryden's desk. The ring fit perfectly into a slot, and she turned it, activating a communicator. A hologram shimmered in front of the desk, forming the image of a robed figure. She took a deep breath and faced him, back straight, ready to report. The leader of the Crimson Dawn, the true leader whom Dryden Vos feared disappointing as much as Beckett feared disappointing him, raised his head. Red eyes glinted from beneath the hood. She'd never seen his face.
Yes,
he said, sounding as if she had interrupted something.
I regret to inform you that Dryden Vos is dead,
Kira said, as if she reported to this figure all the time. In truth, she'd only ever seen him once, and that experience had been terrifying enough. She soldiered on.
Murdered by the thief he hired to steal the coaxium shipment, his friend, Tobias Beckett.
Dryden Vos's master was his opposite. Where Dryden would begin to pace around, raging, this figure simply said,
Is that so? Where is the shipment now?
Gone, Kira said flatly. Beckett took it, slaughtered the others. I alone survived.
One man couldn't have done this alone,
he said, agitation starting to bleed through his voice.
I wasn't there, she said. But if I had been, perhaps I could have saved him.
The figure chuckled, then, breaking the tension that had been strung tightly between them across light years, he pulled back his hood, and Kira saw him for the first time. He was an older Zabrak, with scars and wrinkles on his red and black lined face. His horns were short and surrounded his head like a crown. He shifted in his chair, and Kira saw the metallic glint of an artificial limb under the robe.
For now, you will assume control over all Dryden's territories and interests. Bring the ship and come to me on Dathomir, and you and I will decide what to do with the traitor Beckett.
He spat the man's name as if it were sour on his tongue.
And his accomplices,
he added thoughtfully.
I appreciate your faith in me,
Kira said with a nod.
I'm on my way.
And Kira,
he said, standing. He held out his empty hand, and a metal cylinder flew into it. The hologram wasn't detailed enough for her to see what it was, but each end erupted into a glowing red blade, as if two lightsabers were held hilt to hilt.
You and I will be working much more closely from now on.
His image flickered and disappeared, leaving momentary ghosts of those two red blades imprinted on her vision. Only Jedi summoned things with the Force. Jedi and Sith Lords. She suddenly understood from where Dryden's paralyzing fear of his master originated. She fired up the ship's engines from Dryden's desk, thinking about Han. She'd been right when she'd told him there was no winning, just staying alive. And just as L3 had worked with a human, even though she had no restraining bolt, Kira would still work with Crimson Dawn. Even beholden to a new, terrifying boss, she still had more freedom and power now than she'd ever dreamed. So this was where Dryden Vos had learned the art of Teres Kasi. It was easy to follow Beckett's and Chewie's tracks in the sand. The human's shallow boot prints and the deeper, furrier prints left by the weighed-down Wookiee used as nothing more than a beast of burden.
I'll make it up to you, buddy, he thought, as he ran down the beach.
The packed sand on the edge of the Emerald Sea made for faster going, and if he was lucky, he would overtake them and catch Beckett by surprise. He wasn't what you would call lucky, unless you counted that he was still alive after every plan he'd ever formed had gone wrong. But this one, strangely enough, worked. A dash down the beach toward the port, climbing a rocky hill to get to the dunes, and waiting patiently for them to come along at Chewbacca's burdened, ponderous gait. The sun was going down into the sea, and Han angled himself so it was at his back. He needed every bit of help he could get if he was going to beat the fastest shot in the galaxy. Beckett spied him then and grinned. This thing was a game to him, all the way down to the end.
You're relentless, kid. I'll give you that.
Chewie put the coaxium down on the sand with a grunt and edged away, being the only one around without a blaster. He rumbled something to Han.
Came as fast as I could, buddy, he said.
Beckett took in Han's disheveled state, the glass on his clothes.
Dried and dead?
Han brushed off his jacket with his free hand, keeping his eyes on Beckett.
Yeah. Kira kill him?
Han stared at him. He was somewhat hurt that Beckett didn't assume he had just come from a successful fight to the death to rescue his friend and steal back the stolen goods. Beckett grinned at him.
You still don't get it, do you? It was never about you. She's ambitious.
Han frowned.
You know what your problem is? You think everyone's like you. Not you, kid. You're not like me,
Beckett said, shifting back and looking Han up and down, clearly taking stock of what he saw. He made it obvious with his eyes that he didn't see much there.
I hope you're paying attention, because I'm about to tell you the most...
Han knew he couldn't beat him in an actual shootout, but he also knew that Beckett had underestimated him since they'd met. The blaster kicked in his hand as he pulled the trigger, and Beckett stopped speaking, eyes going wide from shock and pain. His blasters dropped from his hands as he sank into the sand, realizing what had happened to him. He looked down and registered the smoking hole in his chest. Han leapt forward and caught Beckett before he fell, easing him down and cradling his head. There was no other way this could have ended, but that didn't mean the decision didn't hurt.
Beckett,
he said. He could find no more words to say what he wanted.
No,
Beckett managed to say, grunting with the effort.
You made the smart move, kid. For once, I would have killed you.
Han held him, refusing to let his mentor bleed out on the sand all alone.
I really was gonna learn how to play that Valacord,
Beckett said.
I know you were, Han said, smiling sadly.
Beckett looked at him, his eyes soft. Maybe he was satisfied he had passed at least a few skills along. Maybe this kid would last as long as he had. He grimaced, and then his eyes went out of focus. His body, which had been rigid with pain, relaxed. Han didn't expect the fierce wave of grief that crashed over him, and he held Beckett for a moment longer. Then he gently laid his mentor back on the sand and stood up, head bowed. A rumble sounded, the unmistakable sound of a starship's engines firing. And around the bend came Dryden's yacht, gaining altitude. For an instant, he thought he saw Kira standing at the window, watching him, trying to convey everything she felt in a single moment. He knew he might never understand Kira's heart. He did know she hadn't chosen him, though. The Crimson Dawn still had its claws in her. Or perhaps she had become the claws. Regardless, she was gone. Like Lando. Like Beckett. Maybe I really can't trust anyone in this life, he thought, despair threatening to overwhelm him. A heavy paw landed on his shoulder. Not a slap, but with enough weight to remind him of the meaning behind the gesture. Chewbacca moaned something that he was pretty sure weren't even words in Shriwook, but more of an emotional indication. Sadness. Support. Brotherhood. Then he said the word that meant either tribe or family, or both. Kira had said Chewie needed him, and he needed Chewie. That was perhaps the most truthful thing she had said to him. Thanks, buddy. He rubbed his face and saw the coaxium cases sitting on the ground. You're right. Let's finish this. To the shock of every Cloud Rider Enfys had with her, Han and the Wookiee had returned. When the yacht had fired up and left, they'd assumed he'd betrayed them. But Enfys held on to the hope. Really, what else did she have? They'd returned, though, and helped the Cloud Riders secure the cargo on their swoop bikes. Even in her limited time knowing him, Enfys could tell that Han was strangely quiet. He stood, staring at the cases, frowning slightly, as if it killed him to let them go. This had cost him a lot more than potential credits. More than she would probably ever know. She smiled at him as she approached.
Do you know what that really is?
She asked.
He nodded. About 60 million credits worth of refined coaxium.
Bitterness colored his words. She shook her head slightly.
No. It's the blood that brings life to something new.
The bitterness didn't leave his eyes, but he grinned sardonically at her. This man had no patience for metaphorical speech.
Yeah? What?
A rebellion,
she said, straightening her spine. He shook his head. He was a smuggler. One she could count on to do the right thing, but a smuggler still. The problems of the galaxy weren't his to worry about. He thought about ships, and jobs, and credits. She glanced up at the Wookiee to include him, but still spoke to Han.
You could come with us, you know. We need warriors and leaders, like you.
He actually looked like he was considering it. She'd hit the right spots, calling him a warrior and leader, instead of kid, like Beckett. But then he smiled and shook his head.
Maybe someday you'll feel different,
she said, shrugging. She pulled out the one thing she had kept aside for him. It was nothing close to payment for what he had done and what he had lost in doing it. But it was something. She held out to him a small vial of coaxium, glowing slightly in the dying afternoon light. He accepted it with a surprised smile that made Enfys think that perhaps it meant something more to him than something to sell. Oh, he would sell it, no question. But the gesture meant a lot to him regardless. He handed it back to Chewbacca and said, "Don't lose this." Enfys nodded once more at him, knowing that thank you wasn't nearly adequate. She mounted her swoop bike and put her mask firmly over her face. Her cloud riders waited for her to launch, and they rose into the air with a wave. They had a rendezvous to make. Chapter 20. This particular bar, on this particular planet, was located in a jungle outpost. Hard to find, harder to get into past the guards at the entrance, and seemingly a safe haven for someone who wanted to hide from angry pursuers. Climate-wise, it was a far cry from the snowy Fort Ipso Lodge. The foliage drooped over the walkway to the sabacc table, and Han had to push the larger leaves out of the way as he wiped a bead of sweat from his brow. Lando sat in his usual seat, the head of the table, facing the door, slouched in his chair, flirting with someone. This time he was shining his perpetual grin at the woman sitting next to him, and then around the table at the assortment of disgruntled gamblers. He wore a yellow shirt with tropical designs, white pants, and a white cape. No dark colors here, not on this paradise. He held his empty glass up to be filled by a waiter as he leaned in to check his hand. Han and Chewie stormed in, glaring at the smooth operator. Lando glanced up and spotted them. In a blink, his face went through the emotions of shock, calculation, and then a fake, wide smile. "Han, Chewie, you're alive. That's great." "What? You mean after you left us for dead on Savarine?" Han snapped. "I ought to have Chewie pull your arms out right now. In fact..." He looked over his shoulder at Chewbacca, who roared his outrage at Lando's betrayal. Lando stepped back, his eyes wide and hands held up in supplication. "Han, come on, we're friends." Han glared at him, letting the tension mount, and then he laughed, grabbed Lando's right wrist, and pulled him in for a tight hug. "I got you," he said, laughing. "You should have seen your face." He held him tightly for perhaps a moment too long to let Lando get his bearings and then let him go. Lando wore a shaky smile that quickly gained its usual confidence. "No, I knew you were kidding," he said, chuckling. "So, did you bring my cut?" Han scowled. "Your cut? We barely got out of there alive. All we walked out with was this." He gestured to Chewie, who held out the coaxium vial. It was a pittance compared to the amount they had stolen, but compared with the average gambler on Numidian Prime, it was a potent bargaining chip. "Figure it's worth about 10,000. Enough for a decent buy-in?" He looked meaningfully over Lando's shoulder at the table, where the gamblers waited impatiently for Lando to return. Lando laughed. "You want a rematch?" He sounded as if Han were a child asking to touch a hot cooking surface for a second time, forgetting yesterday's blistering burn. Han smiled, pausing to let Lando think about the bait. Coaxium, any amount, was too good to pass up. "Why not?" he asked, shrugging. Han played it just like he had during their first game together. Losing some matches deliberately, losing others accidentally, winning just enough to stay in the game as the credits slowly grew in front of him. Some gamblers left the table in a rage, tired of losing to these two humans who seemed to have their own battle going on. Eventually, most dropped out or folded, But they all stayed to watch, this being a game unlike any other they'd seen. The pot continued to grow and grow, the two men barely looking at it, either glancing at their cards or carefully watching the other. Lando had a good face for bluffing, in that he always, always wore that confident smile. When the pile had grown to ludicrous proportions, he peeked at his card and then sat back and regarded Han.
I'm telling you, don't do it. You fold now, you walk away with almost enough to buy your own little ship. You call, I'm gonna clean you out. Again.
Han looked at his cards, and then leaned over to his left where Chewie sat. He showed him the cards, and the Wookiee grunted, and then shook his head slightly.
I don't know, Han said. I'm feeling pretty lucky tonight. Think I'm gonna call.
He pushed all of his winnings, including the glowing vial of coaxium, into the middle of the table to the game pod.
You really got it bad for the Falcon, huh?
Trust me, it's mutual.
She loves me, Han said, grinning. He remembered the feel of the yoke in his hands, how the ship had responded to him, how she flew even as she was getting disabled bit by bit in the maelstrom.
Lando shook his head and leaned forward, his right hand dipping below the table.
He paused, and his confidence cracked just a moment, but Han caught it. Lando had been fingering his hidden sleeve holder, where he had been holding a green idiot, a Psylop if you weren't from Corellia, of which there were only two in a Sabacc deck. It equaled zero, and was a card that could turn a game around, the card that had turned their previous game around. Too bad for Lando that Han had lifted it from his sleeve when he had hugged him. Han raised an eyebrow.
You got everything you need, pal?
Sure, Lando said, smiling, like he was facing a door behind which lay a room that had formerly held a handsome young diplomat looking to have a little knight's rebellion against their rules-obsessed father, but he just found out held a rancor that wasn't looking to rebel against anything.
He put his hand on the table. Two tens, two negative tens. A solid hand. A winning hand in almost any game. Han certainly had thought he'd won the game when he'd had this hand, the last time they'd played with a ship as the prize.
Not bad. Not bad at all, Han said. If only you'd had this...
He held up his left hand, the lifted green Psylop between his fingers.
You'd have been able to beat this! He put down the five cards he'd been holding in his right hand. Two tens, two negative tens, and a green Psylop. Five cards together equaling zero. The best hand in the game. Full Sabacc, Han said, grinning. Fair and square, baby.
Lando's face fell as he stared at the cards. Han sat back, grinning, and listened to Chewie beside him roar his celebration. His own ship. A co-pilot and friend he trusted with his life. And they were finally on their way. They had an amicable split. Perhaps because Han was feeling so good he was ignoring Lando's rage. But he allowed Lando to remove his cape collection and the more expensive liquors in the wet bar. Han didn't go for the fancy stuff anyway. He was developing a taste for Savarine brandy, though. At last, Lando had laid his hand on the navicomputer briefly and closed his eyes.
Take good care of her, he said.
Han grinned.
Why would you think I would ever treat this ship poorly? She's the best in the galaxy.
Lando shot him a look of pure hatred, letting him know that this wasn't over, not by a long shot. And with a swirl of his cape, he was gone. Han sat down in the pilot's seat and hung his gold dice on the dash, his eyes slightly damp with the realization that he'd finally gotten everything he had wanted. Not everything. He watched the dice swing momentarily and wondered where Kira was. He'd accepted that she really had changed during their time apart, and had different ambitions. Maybe it was true. She never could have gotten out of Crimson Dawn. Or maybe the truth was, she didn't want to. It didn't matter. She was gone. Chewie groaned a question, snapping him out of his thoughts. He sat in the co-pilot's chair, adjusted for his massive size, flipping the switches to ready the ship for light speed.
"Tatooine,"
Han answered. "Beckett said there was a gangster putting together a job." Chewie made a negative bark. Not a refusal, simply a request that Han think this through before they get in trouble again.
"What have I ever steered you wrong?"
he asked with a grin. Chewie shook his head, and Han focused ahead of them. He put his right hand on the lever, and Chewie put his left paw beside his.
"Punch it,"
Han said, and together they summoned speed, and the Millennium Falcon responded. Epilogue. Enfys always had meetings in her full armor and mask. She didn't own the proper clothing to meet with government officials, but her job was not diplomacy. And it was probably for the best that she hid her identity, even from her allies. It wouldn't do for them to start doubting her because of her age. She stood, her cloud riders behind her on their swoop bikes, protecting their coaxium shipment, as the Onderonian shuttle landed in front of her. A tall, heavy, brown-skinned man wearing a long black cape exited the shuttle alone.
"He actually came alone. Brave," Enfys thought.
"Saw Gerrera,"
she said, her modulator disguising her soft voice.
"Enfys Nest," he said, glowering. "I hope you have good news for me."
He sounded as if he didn't believe she ever could.
"Refined coaxium. Enough to power a fleet,"
she said, gesturing behind her.
"I trust you will put it to good use."
He relaxed, shock obvious on his face.
"How did you manage this?"
"We have our ways,"
she said.
"You..."
A sound came from the shuttle, something clattering to the floor. Guerrera's head whipped around, anger rising. He hadn't come alone. Enfys closed her fist by her side and heard her cloud riders raise their weapons.
"You agreed to come alone,"
she snapped. He held his hands up and backed slowly toward the shuttle.
"Put your weapons away. There is no threat. My ward wanted to come with me. She's young, curious."
"Your ward?"
"Yes. She's 11, but she needs to learn."
Enfys heard small feet running on the shuttle.
"Bring her out."
"Lower your weapons,"
he countered. Enfys nodded once and raised her hand to order her riders to stand down. She heard them relax and lower their weapons. She knew they would stay alert regardless. She tensed, poised to dodge to the side if any guards came running down the plank, weapons hot. But a girl did indeed emerge, cautiously, but unafraid. Her skin was paler than Guerrera's, and her brown hair was loose and hung in sheets down her back. Calculating blue eyes took in Enfys and her team. Enfys liked her at once. Saw gave her a little push forward.
"This is Jin."
"Why would you bring your young ward to a dangerous meeting?"
Enfys asked curiously.
"She needs to learn,"
he repeated.
"If she's going to survive."
"She's very young,"
Enfys said, repeating things that had been said about her over and over again. She wanted to see how Guerrera would react. He frowned.
"Many people treat age as if it's a shield to hide behind. Something that protects our children. And sometimes it is. Until someone comes along who doesn't honor the shield. Then we must decide if we're going to keep pretending that shield is there. The Empire doesn't care what age she is. So she must learn about this threat that faces all of us."
Is that so?
Enfys took a step forward.
Come here, Jin.
The girl took a step forward, unafraid. He let her go, waiting patiently. Enfys looked down at the girl. Even though they came from such different worlds, she still reminded Enfys of herself 7 years ago.
The luxury of youth, banished in the face of turmoil.
She reached under her mask and pulled it off, shaking her wild hair free. She smiled at Jin, who still watched her, unmoved by the reveal.
Do you think that your youth protects you? No,
Jin said flatly.
You're right. You're smart. Still, they're going to underestimate you. Make them regret it.
The girl's eyes narrowed, as if the threat were right behind them.
Eh? Everyone,
Enfys said.
Make them regret it.
Jin nodded once.
If you're satisfied,
Guerrera said, sounding tense.
I am.
She gestured to the coaxium behind her.
So will this do? It could do a lot of good.
And harm,
he said, his eyes flicking to the fuel.
Which is what we need.
I would hope that you would be more precise in your ways, Saw,
she said.
You're going to need some attention to detail if your fight is going to work.
I would think that you, of all people, would accept that allies come in different shapes, sizes, and ways of fighting,
he said.
We are fighting the same enemy, moving toward the same goal.
She sighed.
I only ask that you don't waste it.
He made a gesture. So welcoming and graceful, it seemed ridiculous coming from someone so rough and unfriendly.
Come! Let's talk.
He boarded the shuttle, and Enfys followed him. Secure that her cloud riders would keep the ship grounded until she exited safely, she passed Jin, who watched them both carefully.
He's going to underestimate you,
she whispered. Enfys smiled to herself. The girl learned fast. They might be in good hands after all.
This is Mark Thompson. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of Solo, a Star Wars story by Mer Lafferty. This program was produced and directed by Kevin Thompson. Executive producer, Nick Martorelli. Solo, a Star Wars story, is a production of Lucasfilm Limited and registered or trademarked where indicated. Copyright 2018, all rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music master production copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Penguin Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.